Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all, it's BD. It's the middle of summer. John Jordan is sick. He fell into the pit of Sarlacc tonight, so he's out of commission. But I have Nick. Is it Gelia? I always screw up your last name in my own head.
Unlike a telemarketer when I was growing up, you've never called me Mr. Genitalia, so we're all good.
Yeah, that's true too. We wanted to go over a little bit of the venue stuff that's been kind of whipping around. I've purposely kind of kept quiet since doing the last blog, trying to collect some information and try to corroborate and kind of get a gist of where things are. And I felt the best person for that is Nick, who did the blog Let There Be Lighthouse. And he and I really in the past shared a lot of information back and forth to try to get a grip on what was going on with the Lighthouse Project, especially when mainstream media wasn't really following it or really digging, at least for a long time with it. So, and, you know, there was a lot of moving parts and a lot of rumors whipping around that. And it was try to get to the truth of the matter. And I thought that Nick would be the best guy to bring this week to kind of go into, you know, this summer's, you know, it's never a quiet summer. Right, Nick?
No, unfortunately, it's not.
It's crazy. You know, basically, if we start from the beginning, and I'll start it from, and Nick knows this, from April 29th, I was contacted by somebody who had some, I think, a wife working over in for the Wilpons, basically hearing that they were drawing up some sort of plans with Queens. I tried to follow it up a little bit, and because I didn't really have a whole lot of routes into the Wilpons, I ended up with a dead end, and we just sat there and wondered if it would come out again. And I talked to Nick about it, and there really wasn't much to really draw from that. You could understand that they want to check out all options, you know, and then lo and behold, I think, was it the end of June? Was it? You know, Bloomberg finally had a piece, and it was actually, July 21st, actually had a very good, and I thought a very well done piece, especially when I've railed on the Post that seems to just churn out just rumors without exploring it, with an interesting tale of there are some sort of talks with, you know, about Willets Point and a little bit of churn between them and the Islanders and Barclays. And they're looking at some sort of options. And in fact, he came to that conclusion in the article, which a lot of people ignored, that this seems to be some sort of negotiation, growing pain kind of element, things that we've kind of talked about before. And even he even cited it in the article, which I really appreciated, because we've seen a lot of bad pieces. And I really thought that the Bloomberg piece was done really well.
Yeah, it definitely was. You know, it's really interesting to me. I know we've talked about this off air. The one thing that's frustrated me about this experience is you get some of these writers who didn't do anything when we actually could have had the Lighthouse Project. And by the way, I have to say we really dropped the ball here. Back on Sunday, it was National Lighthouse Day. Apparently, we really should have done this on there. Have some nice symmetry.
And wore our Let There Be Lighthouse our Lighthouse Project hats.
I lost that, I think, 3 moves ago. But yeah, looking at this though, seeing some of these writers who didn't really lift a finger when the public was clamoring for the Lighthouse Project and the town of Hempstead decided to kill it. You know, people who wrote dishonest articles about the referendum that somehow managed to portray it as a boondoggle that would make no money and a bonanza that would make Charles Wong billions of dollars, when it by definition can't be both. You know, now seeing them come out and talk about, oh, the Islanders belong on Long Island. Oh, we're putting out all these polls about Long Islanders want Islander fans to go back. You know, I'm not lumping the Bloomberg piece in with that by any stretch, but for me, it's very frustrating that while I understand that this is an adjustment for a lot of people, and it's not like me where I can actually get to games now from my apartment in Hoboken when I really couldn't to the Coliseum. I just feel like this wound keeps reopening. It's not really helping people move on, and it's also creating factions in the fan base. And that's why I'm glad we're here to try to sift through this and try to separate fact from fiction as best we can.
Yeah, you know, and that's the interesting thing, and I think it needs to be said, really, and let's say it clear, there are no facts. There is not one fact, and this is nothing against any of the articles that have been done. Bloomberg has had 2 good ones that we'll talk about, and Newsday did a good job with Jim Bobak and Robert Brodsky, who did a wonderful series of tweets that reiterated things that I've said for the last year of why the Islanders, the new ownership, would not go back to the Coliseum. And if you've missed that, you should really take a look at that.
At the end of the day, Nassau proved that they don't have the right to have a sports team anymore, and you don't pay $500 million for a team that plays in Uniondale.
Well, that's just it. You know, you got to look closely. The new owners, Ledecky and Malkin, paid $500 million. That's half a billion.
$548 to be exact.
Yeah, that's the valuation that they bought in with. And then you have, if you look at Vegas, they spent $500 million. These are very expensive, costly teams. And nobody's going with that type of – there's no profit to come back to the Coliseum. They bought in because they felt they could have a city team. And the rumors that stem to whether it be Barclays or Willett's Point or even Belmont's, because it's right on the Queens border, they are still city teams. And I think that's where the ownership is interested in. And I don't think that Coliseum ship has sailed. And, you know, I don't need to reiterate the points. I really appreciated Brodsky, the political reporter for the Newsday, hitting those exact nails of things that we've cited for a long time, you know, also. So this is not just, you know, a bunch of bloggers saying it. The journalists are saying it as well. It is at the point of common sense now.
Absolutely.
We didn't forget.
You took the words right out of my mouth there.
Coliseum was not a big money maker. The area is still, you know, there's no money to be derived from the ownership. The day that Nassau County can pay the Islanders per year, D plus inflation, whatever else, per million per year, is and give a 25-year deal, is the time that the Islanders will actually come to the table actually listening. And that's not going to happen if you know you and live in Nassau County. There's not money to do shit. And that's the reality.
No. And especially given how everything's really been going down, if they couldn't get support for a private development and they couldn't get support for an arena referendum that would have been paid by the majority by the team, which is unheard of for these things, the average public share of an arena is 65%, according to an interview I did with Andrew Zimbalist on the blog, the famous sports economist from Smith College. But if they couldn't get that through, how are they going to get through the kind of guaranteed money that Barclays is giving the Islanders every year. It's $54 million or something like that, right?
Well, that's just it. You know, people want – it's not reality anymore. They want magic pills. They don't care what the facts are or what the reality is. They just want something. And that's the problem because it doesn't work that way.
And no, I mean, but the problem
if you went through the Lighthouse Project with that same philosophy, you put yourself through must have been the worst roller coaster in the world and didn't learn from it. Because that's what it should have been learned to every, you know, that was an education for everybody involved. That of how deep and how hurtful both parties will be to one another and to their own county. To you know, in their infighting and partisanship and everything else, that the Islanders had to move in the first place. And,
yeah,
and that's
absolutely.
The sad truth of it.
Absolutely. You know, the two things on that, BD, if I may.
Oh, sure.
You really saw it. It became just such a political football because it really came down to it was the Brooklyn Dodgers all over again. Robert Moses thought he could jerk them around and offer them the current site of City Field, where they eventually built Shea Stadium before that, instead of the area where Barclays now sits, because nobody thought the Dodgers had any choice and they weren't going to leave. And the same way, you know, it's the only way you can explain this thing where the Republicans and the Democrats cared more about the other party not getting credit for saving the team than actually saving the team.
Yeah.
And it's the only thing that accounts for how we had a poll the week before the referendum went down, where 75%, I think it was 70 or 75% of Long Islanders said, the Islanders are worth saving. We should do everything possible to keep them. And then 3 days later, they go out and punch their ticket out of town. It's an unreal amount of cognitive dissonance. But, you know, the one thing I've been saying a lot lately, and because the problem really comes down to, it's always the think versus the feel. As we always say, and one quote that I feel like, you know, my future kids will want to hit me because I'll wear it out so much is this whole reminder of you can't reason people out of positions they didn't reason themselves into.
Yeah.
So that's why I think we still have these high emotions and this willing disregard of reality because it wasn't a reasoned position to begin with.
Yeah, that's true. And that's what makes it so difficult now, because I do think here people are kind of stepping into the same stuff again because they want a result, whether they want Queens, whether they want the Coliseum, whether they want Belmont. They're willing to take away any kind of, you know, some of it is common sense, some of it is just logic, and some of it is ignoring the lack of facts, and so much so that you know that at you know and I can understand it, but the fact is we're doing it again, and it's happening again, and it's going to be a very, very sour ride because of it, because I think in the end, you know, we'll go through this bit by bit, but I think the long and short of this is that this is a battle between Barclays and the Islanders, some sort of negotiation and willingness to work with one another, and that is what the reverberations are all about. So, and what
100%.
And we'll go into the particulars of that, and I'll even cite some of the Queens rumors that I had to go through and could not find any substantiation, and I threw it to everyone on the planet. But basically, that is my firm belief in the end right now, until something becomes tangible. And I think that's the thing. There is nothing that has been cited, despite some good articles. And clearly they're doing something behind the scenes to kind of shake the tree and kind of give themselves some negotiating power and a bunch of different things behind the scenes. While when you see quotes from them themselves, whether it been Ledecky, oh, we're at Barclays, you know, we're there for the long haul, or Brett Yormark from over from Barclays, who says the same. You know, we look forward to working with the Islanders again. You know, so those are the real quotes, and the rest are this reverberations and trying to make some sense of this giant haze of dust. And I think it's important to kind of piece through that, because there are issues with many of those. And let's go into the one right off the bat. If we go to the article about Queens and City Field, is that Willett's Point is currently in litigation. And that litigation is to work on and getting the ability to build a mall.
Yeah, and I think Bill de Blasio is already on record that he will fight tooth and nail to avoid any sports use of that facility. They were also, he's also against a proposal by NYCFC to build a soccer stadium there.
Yeah. I believe.
So this is not a done deal by any stretch.
No, and that's what makes me feel that what I think is possible is, and what I think the talks might have been about, is a secondary backup plan. If the mall is deep sixed, and I do believe that they think that there's a good chance that the mall will actually go through. You can't say it for sure, but I think that they're looking pretty positively, despite that it's, you know, I think that it's stuck in some sort of appeal. Basically, to me, it sounds more like that Queens is looking at possibly the Islanders as some sort of backup plan to not lose the ability to use that space for something else.
Yeah,
and
they finally
think
cleared
that,
the chop shops out. They want to get something good in there. No offense to the chop shops there. They want to get something that's not the chop shops in there.
Yeah, they want to do something with the area, and I think that the Islanders was some sort of fallback plan so they don't lose and have something as some sort of fallback to fight with de Blasio and say, hey, we tried them all, you know, didn't go through, but here is this new plan, let's get on board it, which is going to be a whole nother ball of wax. The fact is, they're not at that point. And I think that's the reality of Citi Field. You know, there was a lot of talk and rumors, and, you know, maybe, some of the stuff was that, you know, that I had heard. And like I said, this is pure hearsay. This is not substantiated, but it is things that have been kind of floating in the back that I've been trying to piece together. And I think it all stems to bunch of people from Sterling with Properties, which is what Wilpons' company,
yep,
when they were doing this backup plan, ended up going to some of the games and starting to talk to some of the fans. And because of that, they made it sound to them like they were drawing up plans and this thing was happening. And I think that has carried over and really gotten some legs and kind of gotten out of control. And that's what I think why this rumor kind of has been floating in the background, because I can't substantiate it any way, shape or form in any direction. And nobody will obviously comment on it. But when you look at the Willett's Point and the fact that there is already plans for a mall there, that they're really contingent on, and that might actually go through, then the Islanders are not going to have anything built there anyway.
Nope.
The fact is, it looked to be like they came up with some sort of, what if this gets kiboshed, what do we do? And what it seems to be, and I've heard and also in rumor, that this is also stemmed in terms of not only does, and I say this in an article, and you and I, of course, know this, that Charles Wong and the Wilpons have history. That
yes,
said, it seems to be this talks has to do with Malkin, who also has a relationship with the Wilpons. So I think,
and who also, let's not forget, owns a chain of malls.
Yeah. So some sort of connection is there. And I think that became some sort of fallback position. At the same time, we know that the Islanders and Barclays had, you know, there was definitely an atrocious learning curve with a tone.
Yeah, and I wasn't
Barclays
immune from
staff.
It either.
What was that?
I wasn't immune from it either. I didn't renew my ticket plan due to a little, due to what I considered some false information from my ticket rep.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that too. That the and people did not like that they went ahead and raised prices also, when they had, it's not exactly that they filled the space. So
yeah,
I'm
that,
not quite
sure. It definitely got better. Like, let's be very clear. It got better. I really loved going out beforehand. I think I tried most of the bars and microbreweries around there before the games. But, and I'm very happy that they didn't leave. I'm very happy that I can, you know, go and be home in less than an hour. But I'm also one guy, you know. These same people who want them to go back to Long Island because it's convenient. You know, I would love it if there was a train that took me directly to Barclays from Hoboken.
And
that's
this
not
goes into
either.
Yeah, and as me as a Suffolk County resident, and fact that I work on Long Island now, I only made the plans to go, especially because I've been too busy at work. I only went to one game, and I decided I wanted to go as a fan to experience and kind of put to the test of comments made by fans, some for, some against, and some, you know, critical and things that they wanted me to experience and see. And so I felt it was best to come as a fan to the center. I didn't think it was that bad. I definitely don't think it's as good as what Nassau Coliseum. The sight lines are not as good, but it's still a not a bad facility. The issue is a bunch of different things. One is, and primarily, is a tone deaf, completely very unappealing, and very poor customer service to Islander fans by Barclays. And I think
that's
that
definitely
is
a big problem.
Front and center, besides that the ice quality was shit.
Yeah, I think that one of the two of the reasons the rumors really have legs here are, number one, you thought of one thing due to, of course, Ledecky and Malkin being in as majority owners, and Wong, while he's still around, he's not the majority owner anymore. And that really feeds into point two. The one thing about the Islanders' current lease agreement with Barclays and how they've turned over, for example, the business and the marketing to the Barclays people, nobody who signs that agreement's in power anymore. Because Bruce Ratner doesn't own the arena anymore, Prokhorov does. And Charles Wong isn't majority owner anymore. Ledecky and Malkin are. So I think that could be part of it as well. And that's really where, to me, it gives credence to the gamesmanship theory. There are some people who look at that and assume that, oh, you know, that means that they're not really wedded to the deal. And for me, that means, yeah, okay, they might not be fully wedded to the deal, but that means that they have standing to try to get a better deal, because they're coming in as outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, again, it wasn't perfect. Let's not get anything wrong. It wasn't perfect, but it also wasn't Quebec City.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, because, you know, that though people get upset when that's mentioned again, because they felt that when the Islanders went to Brooklyn, that any chance of them moving or anything like that went away. And I can understand that. Nobody wants to deal with that kind of bullshit. But the fact is, you know, Quebec is a place that is told to wait. And that's important, because they have a lot of money to give. And they, I think, might be a specter behind the scenes of any fight between the Islanders and Brooklyn, just because of that. You know,
absolutely.
And that game, gamesmanship. And it's the last thing that I want to see. Especially from just even the angst from a fan point of view, who wants to deal with
shit
again?
But absolutely. The fact is, Pierre Carpelado has a lot of money.
Yeah.
Brian Mulroney, I think the former Prime Minister of Canada, is involved in that potential ownership group. Although the one thing to always remember, and this is more for the fans and people listening, I know you know this, BB. You think about, for example, Jim Balsillie, and how loud he was, and how often he put people through all of that posturing and all that loudness. And then you think about how that ownership group in Winnipeg swooped in out of nowhere and bought the Thrashers and moved them. You think about how public Andrew Barraway was about trying to buy the Islanders. Did anybody even hear the names John Ledecky and Scott Malkin before they bought the team?
No, they were completely hidden. And even
did
though I knew Barraway was out.
Rumors about Brooklyn?
No
did
one.
Hear
no.
Any rumors about Brooklyn before that deal was signed?
Yeah, it was only that they were aggressively looking at. Yep, and then not a word.
So
and
that's really something to keep in mind. The deals that are done, the deals that are litigated in the public, are the deals that are the highest probability of being leveraged or failing. You always have to worry about the ones you don't hear about.
It's true. Not just to mention, we even found out there were even more potential buyers for the Islanders, and there was not a word. The loudest one was the one that had already fallen through that nobody wanted to believe fell through.
And I did a lot of work in hedge funds. I'm pretty happy to keep a hedge funder away.
Yeah, I don't think that was the answer. But, you know, and here we are with what is loud reverberation and rumor and items and, you know, back deals and checking out opportunities to see if they have some other, what I think is some sort of pieces of leverage.
Yep.
So, because, and I think that it's the Bloomberg second article that actually has become the most important. So I think we should go into that.
Absolutely.
The one where, and I think that any of this fight has to also do with during the season, Prokhorov took over.
Yep.
And is trying to figure out the mess that Ratner left, though he bought into it. And I think
it's
that...
Is so funny about that?
Yep.
I'm sorry, just...
No,
I
go ahead.
I remember making this point on With Every Lighthouse, too. My aunt works in construction. She's on the administrative side. She's done a lot of it in and around the city. So, like, we're talking like World Financial Center, Terminal 4, JFK, Yankee Stadium. And now she's currently at JFK again doing the Delta Terminal. So, I mean, big projects in New York, she's been doing it my whole life. And she made a comment to me about how her boss and nobody that he knows will work with Bruce Ratner because he has this habit, much like a certain presidential candidate, of loading projects up with debt, declaring bankruptcy, and stiffing people. And look at what he did to Barclays.
Mm-hmm. And he suckered somebody to buy it up.
Yeah, we thought we were getting Frank Gehry on that one. I don't mind the design of Barclays, but it's not Frank Gehry.
So, but basically, you know, I think that Prokhorov's role, I think, might be why the Islanders are looking for pieces to leverage, because I think that, and it's in the second article that just came out, what was it?
2 days ago.
A couple days ago on August 9th, that it's said in this article where he's trying to reduce the payments and refinance the debt of Barclays. That is this tidbit, which I think answers why I've been saying and been told ad nauseum that there is some sort of mutual opt-out. And here it is in this, and I'll read out the sentence. Prokhorov and the Islanders have the right following the upcoming NHL season to start talks regarding modifying their 25-year license agreement. If the parties can't reach an agreement by January 1st, 2018, either party has the right to terminate the agreement according to the offering statement. There are two things in that sentence. Prokhorov and the Islanders have the right to start talks to modify the agreement. There's your mutual. They have to mutually agree to modify and their agreement. That explains why there are two different stories going around that There's a mutual opt-out. What it is the mutual, they mutually agree to recraft and modify that agreement. But the rub is this: if they cannot reach an agreement by 2018, either of them then have the right to terminate the agreement. The Islanders cannot open that door unless they have some piece to leverage. Welcome to your Queens talks, your Belmont talks. They'll talk to anybody because they want anything that they can possibly use as a leverage and a backup plan if they're going to go this way. And I think that's what this is all about. Because
I couldn't agree with you more.
And if they don't have any true leverage, this is all about fucking nothing, because they are not going to open up that Pandora's box unless they know they can slide out. And
yeah,
I think that is the reality. And I think that two sentences of that piece explains a lot. And I've held off on blogging about it because I wanted to let it sit and talk to different people, because it all of a sudden became very clear of what this is really about. This is about them not happy with the current status quo, and also making sure if this continues that they, after this season, they need to work on whatever behind the scenes to see if they have anything that they can even leverage. Because if they can't get it through just talks, Barclays has no, and Prokhorov has no incentive, then they can't do anything about this.
Well, yeah.
So
you think about,
I think
it in
that's
terms
really
of your
important.
Own work, right?
What was that?
You think about it in terms of your own work, right? You know, I have a former coworker who was criminally underpaid, because, you know, you come into the current job criminally underpaid and they give you a raise, but you're still criminally underpaid. Bosses, he asked to be adjusted up to the rest of the team multiple times. Bosses said no. Then he comes to them with, hey, I accepted this job offer, I'm leaving. They gave him everything that he had asked for to stay. Because it's exactly what you said. Simply saying, I know that the rest of the team makes more money than I do, adjust me upwards, or else what?
And you have to be prepared.
It's funny because even Malcolm Gladwell covered it in his wonderful podcast earlier today about things like this, about how you have to be willing to do something. You have to be willing to make the move before you can make that statement. And you're exactly right. The Islanders aren't going to open up Pandora's box unless they know they're going to have a place to go. Because otherwise, you know, I'm going to Quebec City next week for a romantic long weekend. But the next time I go to Quebec City, it could be to watch this franchise, unless they do that.
And that's the biggest concern, because if you don't want to hear that Quebec is an option, or that they could leave or anything like that, you better fucking hope and pray that if they open that Pandora's box, that they have a true backup plan in this area. Because if there's not, and Barclays says, this is exactly what we wanted, we want you out, then 2018, that agreement is terminated. And then there's a problem. Because if there's nothing, and you know as well as I, and I know that fans do, how long that it takes to put together some sort of plan and put it in motion, you can see why they're working very fast behind the scenes to create some sort of net and padding if it's all about this renegotiation. So, or otherwise, the Islanders simply have to deal with the deal that they have, which is lucrative, and other owners and other GMs have cited it back to the Islanders that, you know, there's no other deal that's like this. Barclays, despite whatever their learning curves and issues, that Barclays, what they do is unheard of in the NHL, where the Islanders are deriving 50 plus million per year for 25 years, and they get their cut of the licensing and their cut of the NHL, and still have the cable deal and all that other stuff. So they still have something there. So I really think this is, once again, and you cited it and you quote, this was your description of the Lighthouse Project and the Nassau County as a great kabuki show. And yep. I think that's what's happening here. I think that all this talk about Queens and Belmont and all this other stuff is all about having some sort of leverage. And you're going to hear everything from whatever place that could possibly be a venue until Barclays and the Islanders start to work out their differences. And if they can work out their differences sooner than later, then this reverberations will start to dissipate.
Absolutely, because you really start to think about some of these reverberations, and it again goes back to the one of my favorite thought processes on this was the famous quote from Cicero when they were talking about uncovering a potential conspiracy, and it's that famous question, qui bono, who benefits?
Yeah.
And that's, I think the one thing I'm interested in knowing, and I don't know how much of this you've heard, the one thing I'm really interested in knowing, just as someone who's not involved with this in the day-to-day anymore because I like being a sane person, is, or at least a relatively more sane person, I'm not going to oversell myself there, how bad is it between the team and the arena? I think that's something that I never fully gathered. Is that obviously you know that there were some growing pains. There was that altercation between some fans and an usher, and you know, regardless of whatever those fans were or weren't doing, the usher shouldn't have done that. That's inexcusable. So even though I don't want to wade into all that, there were obviously a lot of issues. And you know, Brett Yormark, just constant verbal diarrhea. But I think that's one question that I don't really think anybody's really talked about, is that they're taking it as a given that things are getting to the point where they're beyond repair. Have we heard anything about where exactly things are and what the points of contention are?
No. The only thing we can do is guess, and I think that what the straw that broke the camel's back is the ice. People that have spoken to players and heard from players themselves have cited that we're really not happy about the ice. And that talk of possibly free agents being concerned of that actually came from some of the Islander players. That they were very upset with the ice conditions. And when the players are upset, guess what? Then the organization is upset. Then there's league perception, right? When they needed, and luckily free agency worked out, that's, you know, that hurt them as an organization. And I think that's the straw that broke the camel's back. The ice conditions can hurt players. It was a problem during the time that Barclays should have shown and shined, that the Islanders have an opportunity. It's all about the playoffs. You know, let me tell you something. Barclays in Brooklyn is supposed to have an all-star game sometime. And I think that is not going to happen for quite a while because of issues that are constantly going on. But that was one of the things that I was told years ago when Barclays and the Islanders and Brooklyn worked out in the deal that was likely to be an all-star game involved. And I don't think that is going to happen any way, shape, or form in the next couple of years. And that's a big moneymaker for Barclays especially. That's not going to happen because of these items, because of the tone deafness, because now I think of my guess, and it's just my gut, is that Prokhorov's role now, and his stance internally. I think it's more of, well, fuck him. I think that's the issue. And I think that the Islanders, since that point, especially with the ice, When it started to feel that they hurt the team and the players and their reputation, that's when they were done. They were not happy. They had reached the point of, this is not a good thing anymore. And those rumors came, you know, around that there was issues and they were not working it out. I know that Graziano had that. I had heard it, but it was when we had, and I think he had said the same thing, when we had brought it up to sources within the organization, they felt that it was just, you know, look, there's growing pains. They gave the standard line that they didn't make it sound like this is not, you know, this is just them working out differences and, you know, ongoing. But I do think once the ICE issue came about, I think that's really when the Islanders finally put their foot down and said, this is not acceptable. And I think they're looking for Barclays to come to the table to work those out and to kind of be a little bit more amenable and willing to talk about solutions. And I don't think that's there yet. Hopefully that'll change. And calm, you know, cooler heads prevail. But I think that all this back and forth stems from that, and the fact that this, especially with Prokhorov now in charge, I think that basically, you know, it's just being left to sat, you know, to sit.
Yeah.
And I think that's where things are right now. I don't think the Islanders are leaving. I don't think they're going out of Brooklyn. I think that they're going to be there for the long haul. But they have to sort out this issue, and I think that's going to create a lot of rumors back and forth. And my suggestion to fans is just don't fucking buy in. Wait for real tangible facts. Because as far as I'm concerned, this is all Kabuki show about the pivot of getting things done and there for to be a little bit more amenable to the Islanders and the fans by Barclays. And I think that if that happens and there's talk and they start to work that out, all these reverberations and all this bullshit goes away. But until then, strap in, because I think that we might hear a lot of crap over the course of time, especially as we talked about that if the Islanders and the Barclays have the right to modify their agreement after this season, then you're talking about a lot of reverberations from now till 2018, and good luck. So let's hope that calm heads prevail.
Yeah, that's just not something that any of us want, because the problem is there's them leaving. And frankly, I mean, for me, especially with the Lighthouse Project, I always kind of assumed they were going to be gone if it didn't work out. And it was also because it was the only legitimate proposal on the table. But I think that really makes a lot of sense, because at the end of the day, if you're really looking at it, Barclays' responsibility to the Islanders has a few basic things in there. And as far as I'm concerned, having ICE that's barely playable is as bad as, I don't know, not having running water in the players' locker room. Or, you know, the electricity doesn't work during the game. These are basic things. Basic things that need to be there in order for the team to play. And obviously, if you're looking at these situations, I think I'd also be interested to see whether there is a bit of a decoupling between the Islanders and Barclays moving up. You know, for example, I'm very interested to see, and I'm curious, this is something that just popped into my head, I'm curious what you think about it. How should we interpret it, for example, if Ledecky and Malkin's ownership group starts taking the business and the marketing back from Barclays?
Yep, that would be a continuation of the stuff kind of separating, and not that, you know, that they're not talking.
Yeah, I mean, because that's really the thing. Obviously, look, we don't want to have a situation like what we talked about with the Lighthouse Project. I always use that famous quantum physics question of what happens when an unstoppable force collides with an immovable object.
Yep.
You could have a situation where you run into that again. You know, you have Ledecky and Malkin, who are coming in, and they're very successful businessmen. You can't afford to buy a sports team unless you are. You know, I wish, but... and then on the other hand, you have Yormark, who's convinced himself he's a marketing genius. There could be a situation there where everybody digs in, and you don't want that situation to happen. What you want is to see people amenable to actually questioning their beliefs and working and moving forward, because I think really at the end of the day here, the focus needs to be on a profitable relationship between these two. It shouldn't be any one-upmanship. It shouldn't be anything that's more geared toward somebody winning or losing. Because if that's what they're doing, the fans are going to lose.
Yeah, no, it's and that's the problem, that, you know, the more that that digs in and the more that this, you know, is ongoing, and it could go ongoing like this for the next year or two. And that's why it's so important to kind of lay down the tracks of where some clarity here, because everybody's going to be taken for a one hell of a ride until they sort it, you know, they sort it out. And and the fact is, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
It almost certainly is. You're going to see posturing usually gets worse before it gets better. I think the other thing that I'm really wondering about, and again, I'm thrilled to talk about it with you because I don't really know this answer. What do you think would be a breaking point? What do you think would be a moment where the two sides kind of realize that they need to work together? Is it a situation where the Islanders don't have any other options? Is it a situation where it becomes a little smoother in the second year for Barclays? I don't know what the answer to that is.
Well, I'll give you one example. Let's say that the ice is not fixed properly and the NHL gets involved and Barclays starts to get a lot of bad press and starts to get some sort of sanctions and shit starts to drop with the NHL. That's when the Barclays is going to realize that it's in their best, and they're going to start to lose money when they're tied together in this deal that there really truly is a mutual opt-out, because they must mutually decide to renegotiate and modify. So the fact is, these guys are tied together for 25 years. So therefore, I think that if it gets to that point where Barclays is finally, whether, you know, people at Barclays realize the same thing that we're talking about, but Prokhorov digs in his heels and is just being a dick about it, or, you know, whatever. That's a possibility when they start to realize, people don't realize, they get all angry and emotional, and then it's when money is lost, and all of a sudden there's some clarity and some cooler heads. Because all of a sudden they realize, oh my God, there's ramifications for all this bullshit that I'm doing. And you'll find this true of life and true
Absolutely.
At work and anywhere else. That's
Absolutely.
When it comes about money. All of a sudden, reality slams in. And I think that if Barclays is pussyfooting around and not dealing and handling the ICE situation, I think there's going to be hell to pay. And I think that there will be stuff from the NHL and much more of whatever's in their power, whether it's just a cavalcade of bad press, things that are embarrassed, or things where the games are taken away. I don't know. You know, I just don't know. But that's the kind of things that will affect Barclays' bottom line. And you know what? When it does, and if it gets to that, let's hope that it's just this snit and these rumors and reverberations that this is the worst of it. But let's say it's not. Then it's probably going to go like that. And then all of a sudden there's a reality of, oh my God, if I don't work with this other parties, I'm losing money, they're losing money, everybody's losing money. And that's reality. So that has to be that snap back of, it's in your best interest to come to the table. Even if you don't want to modify, even if you don't want to spend money on the obstructed views. You know, I saw the obstructed views. Don't fucking sit there. I don't understand why it's such a big deal for fans. Don't sit in the seats that are obstructed views. I don't think that is something that is not livable. And the bullshit about the scoreboard not centered is another pile of crap.
Absolutely.
The seats that when you're sitting in a seat that's not obstructed, that's, you can see the ice.
Like my seats last year in
fine.
Section 219.
You know, I think people learn the hard way of making better choices. But the fact is that it is a workable situation. And if this is true, and it is a 25-year deal, and that they need both of them to be willing to modify that deal, then chances are that's not going to happen. And the only way for them to get through it is to work together and stop digging in heels and digging in. And I think that this needs to play out. And unfortunately for fans, that creates a lot of churn and bullshit when we should be focused on the bigger, you know, the questions of offseason. Are the Islanders a better team with the deals that they made? And those players that didn't have good seasons last year are going to step up, because that's really the key to next season. We can't even talk about that, because in the middle of summer, we're now talking about this. And the problem is that this doesn't have a sign yet that this is going to recede. This is a sign that this might continue as they play the press and trickle out rumors and do little deals behind the scenes and try to get leverage with one another. And that creates a lot of rumor and hearsay and all this other stuff. And then all the fans, you know, because they want Queens, because they want Belmont, because they maybe they're unhappy with Brooklyn, because, you know, let's admit most are not happy. There's a small amount that are, but, you know, there's certainly a lot of Long Island fans that are not. It's going to feed into that and get a lot more energy because of that. And
no,
that
100%.
It, you know, and I feel that fans really control that. The ones that sit and put the brakes on and say, oh, let's just wait a minute until something tangible happens. You know, I've seen a couple of some folks doing that and stepping away. And I've seen some folks kind of completely buy into it because they want something, you know, they want the answer of Belmont or Queens. And suffice to say, even from my point of view, I would love that too. But the fact is, I don't see it there. And the fact is that when I've spoken to people behind the scenes, every time Queens or Belmont has been brought up with powers that be that actually matter and that would know, they roll their eyes and shake their head at this all these rumors and all these stories about Belmont and Queens. I think
Absolutely.
That's really important,
you know,
to step away from.
It's really important. And it's also really important, again, to remember exactly what you're saying. There are a lot of things that I wish were true that are not true. My favorite winery on the North Fork is being forced to close due to, believe it or not, it's a zoning dispute. Like, do I wish that something could happen there? Yes. Do I wish I found $2 million under my mattress so I could go buy it and own it and fix all of this? Of course I do. But I don't.
Yeah.
It's funny because I'm thinking about this. I remember when I was first writing the Left Every Lighthouse blog, and I had a fan email me. Again, we're talking 2009 here. We are talking 7 years ago. So City Field was barely new. This guy goes, you know, we have all these proposals out here, and the right thing to do for the Islanders would be to ditch the Lighthouse Project and focus solely on Queens. And, like, you know, I didn't want to be nasty to the guy, and I really hope I wasn't nasty to the guy. But, you know, I'm thinking to myself, like, can you not tell the proposal and someone's idea?
It's a good point that you just brought up, because this brings me to the thing. There is no formal proposal. After the referendum failed, or was it right after the Lighthouse, they had an opportunity to put an RFA into Queens. And
they didn't do it.
Nope, they did not do it. And I warned the people, if you do not see by a certain date that they've made an RFA, it's nothing happening. And guess what? Nothing happened.
Didn't happen.
And the fact is, I'm going to read a couple of quotes that I've kind of tied together, the conversations that I've had. Don't forget that no city, no state agency has been contacted, no plan submitted to anyone or being prepared. There are no negotiations, zero, nada. Unless you see something, anything tangible, Just think that the Islanders are and Brooklyn are playing this game of chicken with Quebec in the background. And it also comes down to
the fact of, let's also remember, we're currently in the year 2016, right?
Mm-hmm.
It takes 3 to 4 years. Assuming you get full clearance up front, it's going to take 3 to 4 years to put an actual arena anywhere. So even as a thought exercise, think about Belmont or Queens. That building's not ready for this 2018 date.
Well, that's easily answered by anybody who wants the Islanders to be back in the Coliseum.
I knew you were. I was going to say it if you didn't. That's definitely something that I'm sure people are going to think of. It's like, oh, that's just as well. They're going to go back to the Coliseum. No, okay, no.
That's it. Yeah.
I think about what my uncle said one time. I had a relative who was interested in going to Columbia or something like that. And, you know, I think the quote was, you know, the only way that kid's going to Columbia is on the one train.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, the only way the Islanders have anything to do with the Coliseum is when they drive by it on the way to the Northwell Health Ice Center.
Yeah.
This is not, it's just not, and I'm with you. I think it's absolutely debatable whether the additions of Vlad Chimera and Parenteau will offset the losses of Nielsen and Oposo. I'm really not putting Matt Martin in there because as much as I liked him, as much of a wonderful humanitarian as he was not a great hockey player.
No, this is all about.
I'd rather ask questions about, you know, can Matthew Barzal fill the Grabowski role since you can't imagine he's going to come back? Or are they a better team with Ladd, Chimera, and Parenteau than they were with Oposo and Nielsen? You know, these are all legitimate questions that are open for interpretation because they're based in reality.
Yeah.
Simply saying, you know, do I prefer Brooklyn, Queens, or Belmont? It's not a question because there's no actual choice there.
No. And that's just it. And basically is what I was told is just don't get caught up in this nonsense. And that is really what I want to share with fans, because I think that this is not about real items. I think this is about leverage items. And I really suggest to fans, step back and try to clear your head, keep your feet and try to keep an even keel. And full well knowing that as much, and myself included, would love Belmont, would love Queens. Hey,
and
I would love them back at the Coliseum.
But if I can.
None of those things are really going to happen. This is about the Islanders in Brooklyn right now.
Yeah, and let me be blunt here, BD. You know, my wife and I are going to probably be buying a house out in the Jersey suburbs next year. You don't think it would be a lot easier for me to get home after a game if I was going home from Queens? Of course it would. But it doesn't matter because it's not real.
Yeah. And we can go over
I would love it if Ledecky had a private helicopter that flew me to and from my apartment to Barclays. I don't have that either.
One
point I wanted to add in, though, about the gamesmanship and about the improvements. I know I've heard a lot about Dan Craig, the NHL's ice guru, being brought into Barclays to try to help it. So I think one very tangible thing we're going to see probably by the end of this calendar year, not the end of this season, if he's been working with them since the playoffs, he has to have made recommendations by now. Whether or not they've implemented them, whether or not we get any improvement in the ice is absolutely something that needs to be looked at. Now, again, I think that we're also spoiled in a way. I mean, the Coliseum didn't have great ice either. And frankly, MSG has miserable ice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ice and the team that skates on it are both just miserable. But if you're looking at it, obviously the fact that a large chunk of that playing surface is covered by seats when there's a basketball game is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the question really comes down to, because they're either covering the ice over or they're melting and reforming it a lot more than they ever did at the Coliseum. So these are obviously things that exist now that didn't exist before. And that doesn't mean the Coliseum was better. It doesn't mean anything other than the fact they didn't share that arena with another pro sports team. They do now. So obviously it's not going to be the same, but if Dan Craig is on site and Dan Craig's been working with them since the playoffs, there have to have been recommendations by now. We have 2 months to put them in.
Yeah, and that's the question. Did they implement it, and how will that be implemented, and have they really talked to the Islanders? Because remember, the Islanders are not there. Their offices are not there. So they might not being told that it's even implemented, which might be the snit fit that's going on. We don't know, and that's just it. This is all, again, I think that this is all just about Barclays and the Islanders and the reverberations of their working together. And I do think that, you know, we'll see how much Prokhorov's role now and stance. And like I said, if this continues, it's until they realize that they're hurting their own pockets by battling back and forth that I think that that this starts to make some headway. But I really...
Absolutely.
Suggest to fans that until something tangible, something that we can cite as fact, some side of deal in place with not only plans but things submitted, nothing
or even
is
proposed.
Real. Nothing is real. This is purely rumor and conjecture and creating a net for themselves, I think. And we'll see what that becomes. And until that, it's a game of chicken about them, you know, finding a way to work together and getting some of the stuff done. And it either goes away or it'll get worse and you'll hear more rumors and ridiculousness. And, you know, try not to buy into it wholesale, because until there's something tangible or a fact, it is pure just people citing stuff behind the scenes and creating some channels and options and trying to get some traction for themselves. And I think that's what Queens and Belmont is all about, that the Islanders new owners, because of that ability to modify and get a better deal, to get, they need something, anything to work as some sort of leverage piece. Otherwise they cannot open up that Pandora's box. And I think, you know, unless we see some more clarity to that lease deal, that's the best we're going to get, is that the piece that came on the 9th of those two sentences that told a far better tale than me being told there's a mutual opt out, and then Newsday being told that either, and you know, other papers, oh, that they could either team can opt out at any time. Actually, it's not true. It actually is. They have to mutually agree to open up that process, and then either of them can opt out. And I think that is the key point. And so we were somewhere in between, and I think that those two sentences speaks volumes. And I'm very curious if we'll ever get some more on that, because it seems very far from what was quoted from Newsday as an ironclad 25-year deal, I think, is the long and short of it, back when the Islanders and Brooklyn did their deal. It's not so ironclad when you have renegotiation points, but people were very secretive, and somebody sourced it, you know, to back to Newsday as trying to act like it was like a, you know, set in stone. But there are a lot of different little nuances and facets here. And I think that's cause for some of this issue. But I feel that the fact that there's a opportunity to negotiate and modify that deal is, I think, why that the Islanders, especially one, is there's a lot of pressure for that team to be a playoff team once again, to have any kind of traction there this upcoming season, to even go into that, because if they go into some sort of fall, there's not much to talk about, especially when Barclays won't be filling seats. On the other end, Barclays is starting to raise prices and losing their season ticket holders from last year. So,
yeah, I mean, I already decided not to renew because, frankly, I didn't like being locked in.
There and was, other people have said that they weren't happy.
Because of the quirks of the schedule, they kind of loaded up my games. I would have like 3 games in 2 weeks and then nothing for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of it, too, was that I had the opportunity on StubHub. I could get better tickets for less money than the average cost of my ticket plan per game. The only reason it was that expensive was because it included a Ranger game. And I'll be honest, you know, I'm undefeated in terms of my Islander Ranger games, so maybe the fans want me to go to more, but I'm not so set on having to do that. I don't want a Ranger game badly enough to overpay for other games, especially considering that one of those games in the quote-unquote 8-game plan was a preseason game. And when I complained about it, all I heard was, well, it's standard. I don't care if it's standard. I wasn't told.
Yeah. And
so there's
it
obviously
goes back...
growing pains.
Yeah, and once again, Barclays is doing stuff that's not really, not only, you know, obviously have not learned so far from year one. And
I had to eat that ticket because it was 3 days before my wedding. That wasn't happening.
Yeah, it could be Barclays, especially with Prokhorov's philosophy, to do nothing for the Islanders at all. So that the Islanders are pissed off and willing to open up that Pandora's box so that Barclays can say, well, we don't want to work with you. And in 2018, we're just going to opt out. That's a possibility, too, since Prokhorov bought into debt. I mean, it is feasible that there's no incentive until they realize that they're losing money if the Islanders are not going to blink on that. But, you know, it's another possibility.
And
like
if
I said,
tells them, for example, that they're going to lose a draft, they're going to lose an All-Star game if they don't do that. If they don't deal with this, suddenly that's money.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things and facets here, and I think that that's the most important part. Is that, you know. And it really is shitty because Islander fans over Nassau County and all the stuff that they've gone through should not have to go through this, where there's now this battle with Brooklyn after one year, where they're positioning themselves like this and having that friction. It really is unfair to the fans. And to tell you the truth, that's Barclays' own doing, because Barclays is the one who's been tone deaf from the very start. So,
yeah, I mean,
something has to give.
Yeah, absolutely. And the problem with Barclays, and again, I've really enjoyed going to the games there. I mean, once I'm in the game, I pretty much ignore it. When they put the Taste NY bar down on the ground floor, that was really big for me. They have a lot of great beers and liquors there that I quite enjoy. But regardless, and I love going to the neighborhood. That was really the best part for me. But I just got this sense of self-congratulatory entitlement from some of the statements that they had from Brett Yormark, you know, and then the team. I know you guys covered this ad nauseum. Then watch the game on your phone is the dumbest thing you can possibly say about the obstructed view seats. You know, make them $5 and donate them to kids every game. You know, do something like that. Get people, get butts in the seats. And once they're there, they're buying hot dogs, they're buying shirts, et cetera. Better than having nothing. Standing the culture of the hockey fan. I think it's also this one-size-fits-all approach. And frankly, I think part of the root cause of that is because Charles Wong really handed a lot of marketing over to the Barclays people. I don't know if they sold him a bill of goods or what happened there, but there's this whole thing of, well, we succeeded in rebranding the Brooklyn Nets. Well, you know, the Brooklyn Nets aren't the Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
And the Brooklyn Nets and the Nets fan base is not the Islanders fan base. So the simple fact that this worked for the Nets, who play a different sport and have a whole different circumstance surrounding them, doesn't mean crap. And I think there has to be that willingness to grow, that willingness to learn, that we started to see at points, but even basic stuff like the tarps having Islanders logos on them for the blacked out seats. Why did someone have to tell them that?
Well, and that's just it. The and Barclay's own problem right now is Barclay's. I don't necessarily think they're a well-run machine. And the fact is, a year in, and they're still, you know, we'll see what this year is coming up. But, I almost feel like, I always felt like Brett Yormark reminds me of Loki, the guy, Todd Hiddleston, who plays Loki in the Thor. That oily...
Loki's
always,
the trickster god.
Always, yep, trickster, always looking for an out, always never face value, and
always
saying one thing and doing another. And I really always kind of look at them the same way. And, you know, Barclays is right now their, I think, the worst enemy, because the more they turn off Islander fans, it doesn't make sense to me. And I don't quite understand how they go about things that, you know, is Yormark just the wrong guy? Do they need to, you know, make a change internally? And, you know, this is just going to continue until, you know, somebody recognizes this and fixes it. Because if what is pervading outward is this stuff that will never sit right with Islander fans constantly, then what's going on internally that they think it's okay? And if that continues, you know, this is the season for them to fix a lot of different things.
And I'll be fair here, BD. You know, for me, I've complained about the Islanders fan base more than my fair share.
Mm-hmm.
And I do find a segment of the fan base to be neurotic and too negative and too willing to criticize the team reflexively. But that doesn't mean that some of the complaints aren't legitimate.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
and you know, there are opportunities. I know Ledecky was talking about working with the Long Island Railroad on train service to and from the games. They were talking about doing like a park and ride from the Coliseum parking lot to get people to Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
All good ideas. You know, I think the thing that, and look, I'll be very honest about this. I only made it to one game during the last season of Coliseum, and you know, I grew up there. And, you know, my uncle who took me to all those games really made me a fan, passed away during the last Islander season at the Coliseum. Because it's actually kind of fitting because he was such a Long Island guy, but neither here nor there. You know, I made peace with it, I think, a lot more quickly than a lot of the other fans, because for me it was, I can have a ticket plan now. I can go to a bar and just hang out and then walk over to the game now.
Mm-hmm.
Those to me were good things. I didn't have to mourn it because I didn't lose anything. I lost a part of my childhood, so let's not get me wrong. And I went to high school at Schoenberg High School right down the block from the Coliseum. So, I mean, that area played a big part of my life. I'm not saying that, but I didn't lose anything, so I didn't have an opportunity to mourn. And I think the Brett Yormark's world didn't understand or respect that for some of these fans who are used to popping in their car and being in the game in 10 minutes, not only is it an adjustment period, it's a mourning period, because it's also a mourning for something that Long Island used to have that it will never have again.
Yeah, you know, they didn't do any research. They didn't question or as I was citing time and time again, that they should have been, you know, I know that they're doing more focus groups, but they should have been, you know, working with the Islanders Booster Club, and I still think that should be the case.
But who's in those focus groups? Are they bearded Brooklyn hipsters, or
well,
are they Islanders?
That's the question, of course. You know, it could be some season ticket holders. They were probably given invites and stuff like that. But the problem is you're not – you need to get some old-time Coliseum. See, the problem is if you go with just the people who bought in to the season ticket holders and not
like
people
Trump,
that are
like the sign guy, for example, even Patrick.
The people that you need
Wilder
is the
fan
people that are unhappy or a good cross section. And the problem with the season ticket holders is that they have all bought in. And you need to get focused and feedback from those who have not bought in or only bought in partially. And I think that's where they're missing
line, right?
The message.
That old classic line, right? I'm sold, stop selling.
Yeah. You need to, you know, the Barclays has not been flexible. They think they are, but they're not. And they seem to really not understand all these different items and what the Islander fan and the history and, you know, trying to get those fans, they really are not understanding the consumer that they're trying to put in those seats.
That's exactly it. You know, I've said a lot of things about the fan base and I believe most of them. But you know what? Regardless of any of those comments, and those aren't all negative things that I'm saying, like, but they could say all these negative things as Barclays about the fan base. And you know, I might agree with some of them, but exactly what you're saying is at the end of the day, those are the butts you need in the seats.
Exactly. Those unhappy
are your customers. It doesn't matter. They're your customer.
Exactly. And that's my great difficulty with Barclays, is that they don't understand that the empty seat is the unhappy fan. And they need to get them back in. And that means shaking their head of whatever ridiculous notions that they have and understand that they don't know. And that's been the problem. They think they know. And that
has
been what we felt has been the arrogance of last season. And I really hope that they have changed and made some steps. I'm a little concerned that they haven't.
Yeah, I mean, I think about this when I first moved into my current apartment here. The upstairs neighbor's bathtub leaked into our bathroom. They come down to fix it. They end up cutting a huge hole in our bathroom ceiling that stayed like that for like 3 or 4 weeks. And every day I'm calling the management company going, why haven't they fixed the hole yet? Why haven't we fixed the hole yet? And, you know, just as drawing an analogy back to the Barclays thing, they started thinking that the problem was noisy tenant won't shut up. Not the problem was there's a freaking hole in my ceiling. And, you know, and again, you know, I've been very vocal about my feelings on some of the people who won't let the Coliseum go. Please let it go. It's gone. I'm sorry. But again, at the end of the day, these are your customers. And the problem isn't, oh my God, annoying hockey fan won't shut up. The problem is, from their perspective, there's a hole in their ceiling. Fix the hole.
Yeah, and it's not, and like I said, it's not that I don't think they're going to necessarily fix the obstructed seats, but at least give some wordage or say, oh, we'll bring in some consultants and look at what we can. And, you know, there's none of that conversation or the understanding of the Islander fan consumer. And like I said, that consumer for them is the empty seat. And it really drives me nuts that they have not understood this in a year. They should have known this before all this. You know, this is their job. And that I'm concerned, especially hearing from you and from others about the higher rates, that once again, they don't get it. And I really hope that I'm wrong, but I think that that's going to continue until they really shake their head of these ridiculous notions that are wrong and understand that their consumer is the empty seat. And it's not going to be answered by just chipping away at Brooklyn and New York or Manhattan and wherever else that they think that might be a trickle. That's a trickle. That is not the gap of the empty seats. And those Long Island fans that are and Queens fans that are staying home. And the quicker they understand that, the better for them.
Absolutely. I've seen the Islanders advertised two different ways prominently in the city. I don't know if you've seen this. I'm not trying to make any assumption, of course. I'm sure you make it in every now and then, even though you're out in Smithtown now, and you're working out there. Metro cards and on the sides of tourist buses. And to me, I love that the Islanders are getting exposure. The thought of them possibly getting a Canyon of Heroes parade actually makes me a little lightheaded with anticipation. But what person in random subway station X is going to buy a Metro card, look at that, and think, oh, I should really go to an Islanders game? What person getting on that tourist bus is going to think, oh, let's go to Brooklyn and go to an Islanders game?
Yeah.
Is that potentially the best use of it? And I really don't want to, I know we've hit them for things they deserve to be hit on here. I really think this is salvageable. If you walk around the neighborhood around the Barclays Center, you see so many bars with Islanders flags in the window. Area really embraces it. I know I saw some posts about how they like us better than some of the Nets fans because we drink more. I'll wear that as a badge of honor. But the pieces are there. I think that's really one thing. I think we're being so critical because we know that there's no objective reason that this shouldn't work. The pieces are there. If somehow this horror show scenario happens, it's going to be because a lot of people who could have put the brakes on this and done the smart thing over and over and over again didn't.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. So, well, anyway,
the pieces are there.
Yeah, and let's hope that cooler heads prevail, and you know we'll go back as we get more of this reverberation, or at least. You know, something more tangible, you know, if something is truly there and truly in some sort of agreement, then eventually it won't be a rumor. It will be some sort of statement or something much more tangible than these back channel antics, because until then, it's just going to be more and more people rumor and innuendo. Because, you know, I've heard everything from, Queens thought they had the Islanders set back in April is one rumor that I heard. But how could that be? There's no place. There's nothing there.
There's not even a plan submitted
that they could even put through, because right now they're working on a mall that is in litigation. So when is that happening? In 25 years? So I don't know.
Let's also not forget one very important piece about Willets Point. Now, I don't know if they're talking about building it in the parking lot, if they're building it where the chop shops are in the Iron Triangle there. But if they're talking about going in the Iron Triangle, they've been trying to get those chop shops out for so long, there were no pipes there. There's no plumbing there. So not only do you have to run basic sewage and piping services that aren't currently there, you also probably have to clean out a lot of hazardous materials that got sunk into the ground because there was nowhere else for them to go.
Yeah,
so you're probably talking about 2 or 3 years to just prep the ground to build something.
Yeah, and that's just it. It wouldn't make any sense unless they're working very, very fast for some. So if Queens is true and real, that something that it really is going to happen, then something needs to be put into motion fast. And until that thing is put forward, there's nothing there to it. So we'll find out hopefully pretty quick if it really is something behind the scenes, you know, whether, you know, Malkin and you know, the Wilpons are working together in a bigger opportunity or something together, or, you know, like I said, as you mentioned, Malkin's, you know, also has ownership in malls. Maybe there's something more to it. But the fact is, something would have to go in motion pretty fast to be something tangible. And I guess that's one good thing. But if it's just more rumor and innuendo over the course of this year or next summer, then the chances that this is all just bullshit about their, you know, positioning once again, because how could they even build anything? There's nothing
Absolutely.
There.
And you know, at the end of the day, just as a reinforcing a word of advice to fans, unless there is a press conference where Ledecky and Malkin are up there with either the Belmont people or the Mets people, treat it like you treat a tweet from Hockey Insider.
Hockey Insider, that clear joke account.
Or even, you look at the people who deal with rumors, like, you know, your Eklunds and your incarcerated Bobs and all that. Regardless of efficacy or how you feel about those guys individually, a lot more deals get discussed than actually get made.
Yeah, that's true. And that's
just something to remember always. A lot more deals get discussed than actually get made.
So, well, I think we've gone on enough trying to kind of hash out.
Did you hear my oven going on in the background? Or did you think I was timing you?
What was that?
I was just joking. My wife is baking in the other room, and the oven just went off right as you were saying that. And I was saying, did you hear that and think I was timing you?
Yeah, that would have been great. But I think we've talked about the ins and out of this enough. I think, like I said, until something tangible, don't buy in. Because
no,
I think there's a lot of wrangling back and forth and things that are just not in control. And the only way to stand through it is just to keep an even keel and just, you know, move forward. And hopefully, you know, John and I will be back to talk about more coming up towards camp of, you know, what we might have on the ice and those items. Hopefully we'll have less talk about this, because my concern is the more that we talk about these rumors and innuendo, it means it's more issues between them and Barclays. And I think that is a bad situation for Islander fans, because I do not think there is a high probability of a Belmont or a Queens until someone says they're putting a plan forward. And as you know, even when you see a plan put forward, please remember the Lighthouse Project. Remember
yes.
the referendum. Just because a plan is put into place doesn't mean it's going to happen.
And let's also not forget that Knife still could have sunk the referendum even if we won.
And despite Cuomo's people telling me that they were looking carefully, I didn't necessarily think that Cuomo was going to bend Knife to his will when they've really done what they wanted.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, did he really want to make the Islanders the hill he died on? No.
Yeah. So I think that was – I agree. I don't think Knife would – especially they deep-sixed so many things that Mangano had tried after, that they would have been happy to deep-six the referendum, because I don't think they could believe that Mangano's office – kept on doing and not realizing that they're there to fix Nassau County, which was in heavy, heavy debt before the recession ever started.
Yeah.
I think that's a whole nother conversation, but I agree. I don't think it necessarily would have gone through, and it would have been even more bitter for Islanders fans. But the fact remains, even if like I said, you can wait for something tangible, but even if something tangible is put forward as some sort of plan, that doesn't mean a whole lot, because the Islanders are already over, you know, they're one out of three, almost one out of four, because the Coliseum's SMG deal is something they should have never gone in with in the first place.
I mean,
the only thing that worked out for them is Brooklyn.
Although I will have to say, even thinking about the SMG deal, it still baffles me how the one thing John Spano probably did was keep this team from moving, because he extended the SMG deal. I'm sorry, no, he extended the cable deal. Excuse me.
Yes.
He kept them afloat by extending the cable deal. It's just amazing how all those things kind of conspired to keep us from losing them more early. But Yeah, it really comes down to, it's so hard to not get caught up in the rumor and the innuendo. It's so hard to not think about it from all those angles. But at the end of the day, we have a team, because really, and I know this is something I talked to you about too, you know, this was the most successful season the Islanders have had since I was 8 years old. And I have to tell you, between all the Brooklyn angst caused by fans, Barclays, some combination of the two, the fact that their possession stats went down so they never really looked like they were fully in control, and all these other things, most successful season in 23 years, and I can't say a lot of it felt fun.
Yeah, and you're not the only one to say that.
I would give anything to have a season that was just watching and talking about hockey. I would really give anything, and that's really what I think the fan base deserves.
I agree, and unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen right now. And let's hope that within the next 1 or 2 years that we get there, because that's my biggest concern from all this, is there is no peace. It buys into people's wants and hits their emotional cords and the passion, and you know, the gap, I guess, with all of us with the, you know, out of Nassau, but the fact remains that we should have and be able to concentrate on one thing. And even when we do, nobody's happy anyway. You know, there are other issues in play, whether it's unhappy with the coach's handling of going to their vets, which was my biggest issue, going to lesser skilled vets over kids, and showing a lack of poise when it mattered. And see how they grow from that, which this season should really be about, in fixing that and the changes that they made.
This is a gut check year in so many ways, because you're going to have to do something to avoid losing Pulock to the expansion draft. And now that you have a team that's really coming in with expectations and building on things that actually happened, not just hopes, now you really have to see, is Jack Capuano the coach of this team? And those are really the things that I want to focus on at this point. What are we going to do about the expansion draft? What are we going to do about, is this the right coach, and is Matt Barzal ready? Those are the questions I wish we were talking about tonight.
Yeah, and what it was told to me when I started bringing up Queens and Belmont was, you should really just focus what deal is the Islanders going to make this season. You know, they're a trade and offensive player away from doing some damage if all things, you know, come together. And I think that a lot of players are going to see a lot of player movement this trade deadline. So I think that they're poised to do that. And we might be talking about more of this Queens and silliness and all these reverberations with no tangible evidence, because it just keeps on leaking out every couple weeks or every couple months. So let's hope that things start to work itself out and we can concentrate on the season at hand, whatever way it goes, because I think that Islander fans need some peace and quiet and some continuity. And right now we haven't had it.
So I hope to see you with Barclays this year.
Yeah. So on that note, thanks, Nick. I really appreciate you coming on, and
thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And hopefully we have not bored or pissed off the Islander fan base by going so deep into this, into all the different options. Once again, I don't think that anything is going to change. It's just about the Islanders in Brooklyn, and we'll go more into that, and we'll you know, as it comes up. But the next time you listen in on Isles Beat, we will go back to the team on ice and what is next around the corner. And we'll leave the venue stuff for some blogs until there's really any reason to talk about it again. But it was time to really dig in deep. And I appreciate you guys listening. And until then, bye-bye. Of course, now I just lost my page and trying to get the end music. So you will hear me look around for it. And here we go. Bye-bye.
Everything's under control. Situation normal.